You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to another episode of The Old Heads. I got Flex right here next to me, and I'm Saul, as you guys all know. Listen, man, today we're going to talk about chemistry. Yes. It's obviously something that a lot of people talk about when it comes to, you know, trying to get into a groove with a team. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about chemistry when it comes to playing time, the efficiency of players, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But that's me personally.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know you're going to have some opinions as well. The thing I will start off with is saying that, like, you know, the big thing with the big three has been always chemistry. Can they get on the court at the same time? Can they do this, that, blah, blah. While I think that is true, I think the thing that's important to recognize is we're not just talking about basketball chemistry. It's also chemistry within the system.
Yes.
And the chemistry within the system is the part that is causing the issue, because they can't get on the court to run the system and get into a good flow.
You're nailing that.
You know what I mean?
You're nailing that. No, I think you're 100% right. And if you want to talk about this version of the Phoenix Suns, we're running an offense that Kevin Young is running, right? And I equate this. I was having a conversation with Espo earlier. The problem, I think, with this team is they're running an offense that I think is good. I think Kevin Young's offense is good. I think he's a brilliant basketball mind. But there's only one person in that offense that's ran that offense consistently, mm-hmm. and that's Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is new, right? And so it almost gives you a feel of rewind a little bit and go to the bubble and go to that iteration of the Suns, right? That's when they were learning Monty and learning Kevin Young's offense. And you saw that first year, there was ups and downs. And towards the end, they hit a stride in the bubble. And then that graduated to the following year where they made the finals running, and the following year, 64 wins. So I think chemistry, from the perspective you're talking about, it's time. It's knowledge of the offense. It's, let's talk old heads. If me and you in the courts and we hooping, mm-hmm. there's that non-communication. Mm-hmm. Does that make
non-verbal
sense? Right?
Non-verbal
communication, yep. Right? Where I can just look at you and you know, okay, Flex is gonna cut, boom, mm-hmm. you got it, right? They don't have that. Mm-hmm. They don't have enough sweat equity in this offense. And so I do think that it will come, but I think that people need to be a little bit more patient, because there are teams that have that sweat equity. And you know, there's one team in particular that we talked about that has that. And I think that's what separates them, a team like, you want to mention
Denver Nuggets, yeah.
Denver Nuggets, right? They have that. And so until the Suns get to the point where they don't have to think anymore and they can just play basketball, I think that's where we're gonna see a lot of issues with this basketball team.
I think to another degree, it's also the Celtics.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Tatum and Brown have played together for quite a while now.
Yes.
They know each other's little isms. And so they can get through a lot of adversity. The thing that I'm always going to go back to is consistency, right? Consistency in being available, but consistency in running your sets, consistency in knowing, like, your verbal cues and how you're relaying those, and what you're trying to tell the other player when you do certain things, right?
Yeah.
If you kind of give like a, you know, like the eyes, and usually you're making backdoor cuts, but this time you're doing a V cut outside, and they throw the backdoor cut because you've done it 15 times in a row. You know, those are the things that are avoidable, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing is also like the turnovers. To me, that has been the absolute like that is castrating the offense.
Yes.
Because the turnovers, and we're not even talking about chemistry turnovers. We're not talking about, you know, the simple things, you know, in terms of like body language or anything. I'm talking about simple things as like dribble handoffs. Like those things.
Yeah.
Forcing a pass through three guys and trying to like whittle it through. Like
that's right.
Those are the things that stunt growth and they stunt the flow of the offense and it gives the other team opportunities. And that's something that I feel like has stunted the Suns so far this year. But again, like if we go back to this and we look at if the Suns average just 10 turnovers a game.
You say 10?
Just 10. If they just average 10 turnovers a game in the games that they had 15 plus.
Oh, the ones that they
just
already played.
Just in those games. Yeah, okay, yeah. Not the other games. Like, okay. I'm not talking about total season. I'm just talking about in those games. If they cut those turnovers from 15 to 10, they're the number one ranked team in the West.
Yes.
Point blank.
Unequivocally. And I'll take it one step further because I was having this exact conversation with someone and it was about the turnovers. And I'm saying, I said 12. I said, man, if you can just limit, let's keep it simple mathematics, three a quarter. That's max. You can only get three turnovers a quarter, 12 for the game. If y'all did that, I'm agreeing with you. How many losses we got? 26. Mm-hmm. I like to think you can shave off six losses easily by doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And that puts you number one in the West. Mm-hmm. And so it's the little things that beating this basketball team. Now, I will say it's all about chemistry and continuity. It's all about what you said. Dribble handoff. Are you cutting back door? Are you V-cutting? Are you popping? Are you rolling? Like, what are you doing? And a lot of times it's throwing into triple coverage. Here's another thing that bugs me out about this team is I feel like there's a heavy dependence on the big three. Mm-hmm. That's unfair to all three of them.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
There's times where you watch them on film and you see guys playing a certain way when they're off the court. And then when they come on the court, it's almost like they're a crutch. The star player becomes a crutch for the role player. And it's like, okay, we're just going to simplify things and get it to this guy because this guy is all world. This guy is a guy that I know can get a bucket and the offense just completely disappears. I think that's something that they're becoming more conscious of. And that's something that they need to continue to do. I'll give you a point, Saul, and this is, you know, I love talking ball with you because we go in deep into some of this stuff. We were at the OKC game. How did Grayson play?
Oh, he's good.
No, OKC.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. He Baylor got any shots.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grayson was a complete non-factor in that basketball game. When you go back and look at the film, Kevin was getting the ball on the strong side wing. He was opposite side wing. Mm-hmm. He was one pass away. Mm-hmm. What they were actually doing when you look at the film is whoever was sticking Grayson was showing and then shooting to Kev. Mm-hmm. And then Kev was going baseline into a triple team, but now Grayson's two passes away.
Yeah.
Right? And so if you look, just go, don't take my word for it. Go watch the OKC tape and then watch the adjustment they made in Denver. And yesterday.
Because where did they position KD against Denver?
Tell me.
At the top.
There we go.
At the top. Because then that forces the wings to only be one pass away. And the third and fourth defender is what I like to call it, the baseline and the sideline, where Kevin was kind of pigeonholing himself into.
That's right.
That was avoided.
That was
so now when the double team comes, and Denver wasn't throwing the double team nearly as much as other teams had.
Yeah.
But it's also because they realized that they had made the adjustment at the top. And so if you send that double, well, Kevin's 7 feet tall, man. That's he can see anything. He can throw
anything,
it, right?
Right.
And you got Grayson Allen, who already hit 8 threes in the first half.
Correct.
You're not going to leave him open.
Correct. And Grayson hitting those shots in the last two games keeps them honest. Mm-hmm. And now you're seeing in the fourth quarter, Kev's one-on-one now, as opposed to them trying to take that gamble with a double. So they put him in a better spot. They put him in a better spot on the floor. Another thing with Kevin is I like when he gets the ball high and he's facing a defender as opposed to with his back to the defender, because when he's got his back to the defender, sometimes you can't see that guy coming.
Yeah.
And so they're making little adjustments, but it's a work in progress. So now I have seen in the last two games a significant difference. Turnovers were better in Denver. They were a little sloppy yesterday. Yeah. But I am seeing that they're starting to realize, hey, man, we can't put everything on Kevin.
No.
We can't put everything on Devin. We can't put – these guys have to be a part of the group, and y'all got to hold y'all end for us to be great.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And Grayson now in the last two games has been great. Mm-hmm. Now we see tomorrow against a tougher team if that can continue. But the chemistry is slowly getting better, I think.
You know what's so funny, too, is when you look at this roster and you look at the beginning of the season – you know, the cast of characters that they had versus what they have right now. I do feel like this organization took a look at what they had, and instead of getting kind of one skilled, you know, kind of, you know, like Yuta was supposed to be this 3-point shooter,
one dimensional
kind of players. They opted to go in a different route and get guys that could facilitate and you could play through. Right.
Yes.
So you bring in a Royce O'Neal. And they could play through that. Yes. Thad Young's got a little versatility. They haven't played with him a lot, but he's got versatility. You can play through him as well.
Yeah.
And you're not going to have to position him to take advantage of his strengths. Now you could just play.
That's right.
You could just play. And that frees up everybody else, which I really appreciate because Royce O'Neal has been a great addition. I feel good with the ball in his hands as well. Grayson's been solid. They've both been, you know, kind of a godsend, to be honest with you, because without those two guys, I think we're looking at a struggling team, you know, looking at the play-in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But right now, you can make a case that they can get to that 4 or 5 spot, maybe even 3 if things go the right way. With 19 games left to go.
Yeah.
But before that, I couldn't see that. I couldn't see that path. And I do think you made a really good point about not ISOing out KD and Book and thinking that they're going to be able to do everything that they can do to score at will. Like sometimes you have to set them up for success.
Yes.
And we talked about that against OKC when it felt like the Suns were not doing that. They were putting them down low on the block. They were forcing them to make a play. OKC kept throwing double and triple teams at him, and the ball was not only like not coming out of his hands fast enough, but also the positioning of the other players was very, very poor.
Yes.
And if you look at the tape too, like again, this is not a knock on Kevin Durant by any stretch of the imagination. It is hard to get the ball out of your hands when you don't know who the hell is going to be doing what.
That's
the reason why he kept yelling at Eubanks. It's the reason why Saben Lee is also just as much at fault for this, because if you look at that tape, he is stuck on the other side and he doesn't even take a step toward the middle of the paint the opposite block. You got to do better. You got to help out your man. It's like that scene from Jerry Maguire where he's like, help me help you. You know what I mean? That's what it is. So, you know, this is an adjustment period for this team. They got 19 games left to go. They got a couple big games against the Celtics and Bucks and Cavs coming up. I'm really excited to see how they match up. I hope Devin Booker comes back soon. And I do have a feeling that I'm not going to sit there and say that like they're going to solve all the problems before they get to the playoffs. But I do feel a little bit better about their trajectory versus where they were a week ago at this point, because it felt like they were just too discombobulated to really fix it. And Houston was making them look foolish for a below average team. And that can't happen.
No. Can we talk about Kev a little bit?
Sure.
You brought him up.
Yeah.
You know, I was a little hard the last time I was at this studio doing the show. I was a little hard on Kev. Mm-hmm. It was an OKC game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I said some things that I think came out the wrong way, but players have bad days. We have bad days.
Sure.
Now I'll own that. I have owned that. It came out in a way in which I was attacking Kevin. Right. And, I will say this, man, when you go back and look at the film, which I was able to do the next day, I felt terrible. I felt terrible because you have to help Kevin. Like, he can't do it alone.
Yeah.
And he was put in spots. If you look at the tape, Saul, he's getting doubled and tripled damn near every possession.
Mm-hmm.
They're denying everything across the court. So off-ball actions become a problem as well, right? It's one of those situations where Kevin just wants to take what the defense gives him and just be a guy out there and play basketball and be who he is. And his teammates have to help him. Royce is still new. There was a play in that game where KD had the ball on the wing And Royce was supposed to be his outlet or his release. Mm-hmm. And Royce disappeared. And Kevin literally threw it to a spot. There was no one there. Mm-hmm. Right? On, you know, right there in the action, you're probably looking and saying, what is Kevin doing? Mm-hmm. Right? But when you realize that that's a chemistry thing, yeah. This is a guy that's been here, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks? He doesn't know the offense as well as some others, and he was in the wrong place, and Kevin expected him to be there. And we see this happen all the time. How many times do you see a guy like Beal or a guy like Book penetrate, kick to a spot when no one's there? Mm-hmm. And typically the guy that is supposed to be there raises his hand, goes, my bad. Mm-hmm. I was in the wrong spot. I was deep in the corner. I should have been higher up, right? Yeah. It's no different, man. And so I feel bad that there's, and from my perspective, I feel bad that there's too many times that KD's the easy scapegoat, man. He's the easy guy to point at and say, it's your fault. Particular that night, KD had a certain amount of turnovers, but Brad and Nurk had their fair amount mm-hmm. of turnovers as well. And so I challenge people to understand Kevin is great, man, but this team can't be great if it's just Kevin.
I don't think this team has a player that's so elite that they can do everything on their
own. That's right.
I just don't. Like, Kevin used to be that guy, but he's older. You know, he's lost a little bit. You know,
yeah, he's 35.
Yeah, he's not 25 anymore. Like, he's not MVP Kevin Durant to that level. He's still playing at a high level yes. and still better than 99.5% of the league. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's just, if you're thinking that he's going to be able to do some athletic things to bail you out or take these miraculous shots, I don't know if he's really quite to that level anymore. He's still a phenomenal scorer, and he can still get you a bucket at will. But the positions that they were putting him in were not ideal to success.
Not ideal, no.
I also want to go to this point. I have, at the beginning of this season, I did not think Bradley Beal should be running point. I thought it should be Book, because Book has been used to the system.
Yeah.
I have now come full circle all the way to the other side, where I don't want Book running point. I'd rather have Bradley Beal running point.
I agree.
For two reasons. One, I think Brad's a little bit better at breaking guys down, getting to the rim, and distributing. Because I think when he has broken guys down, he looks to pass more often than he does look to shoot.
Yes.
If you look.
Yes.
Two, I think he pushes the ball up the court a little bit quicker
yes.
than Devin. I think Devin has a tendency to walk the ball up the court like Chris Paul did.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this team is really at their best when they're constantly playing with only 10 seconds on the shot clock. I think they would be better suited if Beal took a majority of minutes at the point guard position, because he's done a good job in his absence.
Yeah.
And he's done a good job all season in terms of getting the ball up the court and moving around.
What do we call that in the hood when we're playing ball and the guy's just breaking down defenses? Shifty.
Yeah.
Brad's shifty.
Yeah.
And if you look at him, there's people that say, well, you know, Brad's not a good shooter. Well, the problem is that Brad is a shifty guard, and he's more of like a volume guy than an efficiency guy. Mm-hmm. He's got to get into his groove. But when I was growing up playing high school ball and college ball and just learning the game, right? The one thing that my coaches and trainers used to always, they would press this, and I'm sure you heard this. The ticket to being good at the next level from wherever you are is to be able to, at will, get your foot in the paint. Mm-hmm. That was always stressed to us. You got to be able to get your foot in the paint, and then that's where you collapse defenses. That's where you're actually causing a problem. If you can't get your foot in the paint, then that's a you problem. Brad gets in the paint yeah. at will, dude. At will. Shifty, can get there. He's sneaky athletic. And so I do agree, man, with what you're saying. With the tempo, the speed he plays, his shiftiness, and his ability to at will get to the paint, he should be the guy that's running the offense. Because at the end of the day, we can say whatever we want about Point Book, but Devin Booker is an assassin two guard.
Yeah.
And so in no way, shape, or form do I ever want to try to convert Book into a full-time point guard. I'd rather Book be that guy that he was naturally before this season.
I mean, you're trying to take advantage of everybody's strengths, and you have two of the best scorers, best shooters in the league. surrounding Brad Beal.
Correct.
Brad Beal's not the most efficient shooter. He's a scorer.
That's right.
But he's not an efficient shooter. But you have two efficient shooters right next to you. So why not let the guy that's not as efficient as shooting initiate the offense to get the other two? It seems like it's pretty basic and pretty simple.
It's pretty simple.
But you know what? Sometimes we get in our own head talking about that stuff, right?
Yeah. Or
coaches also do too. I brought up Bradley Beal to get into this point because there was a very interesting topic that was brought up on the No Chill Gill podcast about handles.
Oh, I like this.
And so I want to play this clip so you kind of get an idea what we're talking about.
I think people get confused with good dribblers, ball handlers, and handle. Two different things, right? Like Chuck, he just got to where he wanted to do. His dribbles was great enough to get to where he wanted to get to. He wasn't sitting there trying to bop, 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 bop. He was fast and quick, and he just got there, right? Jamal Crawford had a great handle. Jason Kidd was a good dribbler. Yeah. He didn't have handles, right? Sitting there and doing the same thing with Steve Nash, right? They just had a great handle. He didn't do what Kyrie did. That's, you know, you're talking about now Wardell. Curry got that. Chris Paul got that. Like, when they start doing all this shit here and throwing it between the legs, getting it back, that's when someone's using their handle to their advantage. There's this group. There's a rarity group, and that five will be CP, Curry.
Mm-hmm. Kyrie,
Jamal, yeah. Crawford. And then I would have Steve Francis in there as top five.
Mm. All right. So that was very interesting, obviously. And he's right.
He's
handle
right.
Versus, you know,
good dribbling.
There's a major difference. And I wanted to get into this because I felt like his list was egregiously leaving some people out. And I'm not appreciative of
that.
Okay. That's very recency biased, in my opinion.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So I want to go through name top five of all time and your idea, my idea, whatever. But let's list some of the guys that he did not mention. Okay.
Okay.
I thought it was egregious that he left out Isaiah Thomas.
First guy on my list.
First guy. It was egregious that he left out Kenny Anderson.
Oh, my God.
Saw him
in high school, grew up watching New York City,
bro.
Baby.
He was one of my favorite players growing
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. I used to go watch him as a junior in high school, bro.
I don't know how you could do this list and leave this next guy off because you
Please
would
go
pay
where
money.
I, please go where I'm going.
You would pay money to watch this guy dribble. Literally dribble because of his vision and his handle. Jason Williams.
White chocolate.
Bro.
Come on, man.
Like,
I said this. Every person you're naming by in order was what I'm saying. I'm like, bro, white chocolate. Wow, bro.
Yo, Jamal Crawford's got handle. Don't get me wrong.
Yes, he does.
But, oh, man, he wasn't like that.
He wasn't like that.
Jason Williams.
No.
He wasn't.
White chocolate was different, bro. He changed the game.
Yeah, 1,000,000% he changed the game. So to me, to my top five list, I would put Kyrie at number one.
Yes.
Because I think
his
handle is just next level.
Agreed.
And he can literally get to anywhere he wants to go. On top of that, he can score at will as well. So to me, that puts him at the top.
Okay.
Number two would be Isaiah Thomas.
Okay.
Number three would be Jason Williams. And the first two would mainly because they could finish off and get you a bucket as well.
Yes.
And so that to me put them up above. And then you got Jason Williams at number three. And then you have, Kenny Anderson at number four.
Kenny Anderson.
And then number five, I would probably go with Jamal Crawford. I would say Jamal Crawford.
Okay.
Those would be my top five.
I think we got the same list.
Okay.
I do. I'm going to go for my money. And I got to stress this, dog. I saw this with my own eyes when he was in high school at my gym.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, there's nothing in this world like Kyrie Irving.
No.
Nothing.
No.
I mean, there was a drill that I seen him run in high school where they would trap him in a corner and had three people there. And his job was to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like Houdini, bro. It was like watching Houdini on a basketball court. It was like, y'all three go and boop, 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 boop. And there were times where you go to Kyrie and you'd be like, what did you just do? And he'd be like, I don't know. It just came to me.
It's just instincts.
Instincts.
Yeah.
So Kyrie, by far, number one.
You know, it's funny you said Houdini. It literally, to me, is like magic.
Yes.
Where, like, you just are like, how is he doing what he's doing? It looks so natural to him, but if I tried it, I look like I had dysfunctional hands.
Can't
you know
do
what
it.
I mean?
Can't
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
And again, I got to stress this. He doesn't sometimes know what he's doing when he does it. It takes that next, you know, look at and go, oh damn, that's what I did. But that's just a God-given ability, bro, to shift your body and have that type of handle. So Kyrie one, Isaiah Thomas two. I grew up on Zeke, man, and I seen him in an era, recency bias, let's keep it real. I seen him in an era where you can scratch, claw, grab, push, clothesline. I mean, the rules weren't like today, and that man used to just break people down at will.
There was one play.
Talk to me.
Where he was dribbling, and he penetrated to the left side, slipped, fell on the ground, kept his dribble, did a 360, got to the hoop, did a little up and under, and got the bucket. And I was just like, bro, what are we doing here?
Yeah, no, I mean, again, we grew up on Isaiah, and that was God to me growing up. Like, I wanted to be Isaiah Thomas. And so Isaiah, I'm going to agree with you. White Chocolate, I think, changed the game. White Chocolate was the first dude I saw that was dynamic and beyond his years in the era he was in, and was able to incorporate the older era as well. And I say that because I would look at White Chocolate and be like, bro, Pistol Pete was doing shit like that.
Yes.
You know
yes,
what I mean? Like, yes. No one was doing that. He was chopping you down, boop, 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 round the back, elbow pass to the corner. Like, no one was doing that. Yeah. It made me at one point appreciate and say, I gotta watch more Pistol Pete.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody in the game doing what White Chocolate was doing.
The creativity was on another level.
Another level. Incorporating, again, the era he played in and the older era, it was like art, man. It was art. You would watch him every game and it was like, what is he gonna do today that I hadn't seen yet? And so White Chocolate. Number four is Jamal for me. Okay. Jamal Crawford, Jay Crossover. I remember watching a lot of his film in high school. Listen, I'm going to tell people. The Seattle Supersonics, the professional Seattle Supersonics, used to leave their practices and games and whatever and go to where Jamal was playing as a high school player. Hmm. Sean Kemp. Like, them guys were like, yeah, we got to go see Jamal. Like, he was just doing things that, again, I think he took a little bit of White Chocolate and incorporated his swag, his Seattle thing. But for my money, and another thing, he's a bigger guard.
Yeah.
And so that's where I give him a little bit more praise, because he was not so low to the ground like some of the other guys were talking about. This was a guy that's a little bit bigger, and you're like, damn, he can do that. I never seen nobody that size with that type of handle. So Jamal's four. And then, man, number five. I want to say Kenny Anderson, right? I do. I want to say Kenny Anderson. And you know what? I am going to say Kenny Anderson. But there's a guy that people didn't see in the NBA that I'm telling you saw, and you know about him. There's a guy that you didn't see in the NBA that a lot of the people in the NBA, including Kyrie Irving and guys like Kobe, they actually used to train with this dude, because this dude had the illest handle ever. Guy Shamgar.
Oh, yeah.
Guy Shamgar. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Providence, yeah. New York City, right? There's a move called the Shamgar, right? That every player that got handles incorporates. And he created a lot of that stuff. Now, he wasn't skilled enough to have a great NBA career. He's a coach for the Mavericks. Mm-hmm. But when I tell you on that level, God Sham God you talk to any of these ball players and you say, man, tell me a guy that got better handles than you that we don't know about. They're going to immediately say God Sham God. Mm-hmm. So, but for my list, those are the guys I'm talking about. Can we talk about?
I thought you were going to say the professor.
No. Professor was nice too, man. Too. Yeah, professor was sick. Yeah. And that's the thing, man. Like, I like that he said handles versus dribble, because like, I didn't have ill handles. I had good I was a good dribbler that utilized my ability to shoot to open up my handle. Does that make sense?
Yes, a million percent.
I was such a good shooter. Yeah, I was such a good shooter that you had to just, once I hit one, you got to run out. Now it's easy for me to go boop, boop, boop and get you, right? But I wasn't breaking you down.
No.
And there's guards like that. Can we talk about a couple guards like that that are great? Go ahead.
The first one off the top of my head is Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson. Bubba
Chuck. Can we clear that up? Because they said Chuck on the audio.
Yeah. Why do they call him Chuck? Tell
Bubba
me.
Chuck. Back when he was in Virginia, that was his nickname. He played football, and they used to call him Bubba Chuck in his neighborhood.
There you go.
And it stuck. So when they say Chuck in the audio, they're talking about Allen Iverson.
But
go ahead.
Yeah. But AI... He basically had one move that was like a killer crossover kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Tim Hardaway is also up there.
There you go.
Yo,
my God.
Tim Hardaway. Yo, that killer crossover. Bro, he would come down on the break and just bop, bop, bop. And you were stuck. You couldn't do anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, couldn't do nothing.
But like, yeah, AI was kind of the same way. Like, he did it in a different way, though, because he wasn't a shooter. He was a scorer.
That's right.
And he did use his handle to get himself to the bucket and to get open, but he wasn't as dynamic with his handle to put him in the same category as the other guys.
Agreed.
You know, he was just a phenomenal dribbler, right? Steve Francis, I was shocked that they said Steve Francis, because Steve Francis was a very, very good dribbler. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, Stevie Franchise.
I just didn't think that. I never looked at Steve Francis as was like, ooh,
no,
his handle was sick.
Me neither.
Like, I never
mind
felt like
me
that.
AI.
Yeah.
It remind me of AI.
Exactly.
I think they're the same people. I'm telling you, Stevie Franchise and AI were the same people. They used their athleticism and ability to score from all over the court to open up their dribble.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it looked like, ooh, like the crossover on Mike, the iconic Iverson crossover on Mike, right? Those things. But they weren't like these type of handle guys. I didn't see that.
Rafer Alston?
Rafer, oh my gosh.
Skip to my Lou. Let's go,
my
baby.
Boy. And again, yo, a guy that I played with and I saw live, like, man, the creativity, the ability to get, you know what, Skip was probably the best I've ever seen in my life. And again, it was done right in front of me. He was the best at getting you to shift one way and then going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he would, you talking about making people fall? Like, yeah. We love that now.
Oh, yeah.
Man, if I saw, man, I don't think I could count the bodies I saw fall in New York with Skip, man. Skip used to just get you a spot. Skip was another one that played in the NBA a little bit, but was iconic. I'll tell you another underrated guy. Again, I'm sticking to guys that I saw personally.
Sure.
That doesn't get enough credit for his ball handle, but he was cold, man. He was cold. Jamal Tinsley.
Jamal Tinsley
was cold, man. I mean, he had this spin move, boop, 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 shift. I mean, Jamal was another one, but that's like New York City. That's kind of why I'm biased that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit New York City. Steve Nash didn't have great handle.
He's a good dribbler.
Simplistic.
Yeah, very basic.
Simplistic,
very basic.
And he was a lot like what I'm saying. His jump shot set up a lot of his dribbling, mm-hmm. right? And so another guy, Jason Kidd, I agree with them. Spot on, very simplistic, used their IQ and other abilities to set up their handle. But I don't remember them. I don't look at them as guys that can just chop you up and break you down.
For sure. No, there's been a lot of guys in the league and not in the league that had great handle, could ball, you know, and that's the beauty of basketball. It's like there's not a one size fits all kind of thing. You know, mostly these guys were point guards, but every single one of them did things in a slightly different way than the other.
Yeah.
And they either grew upon what the predecessor did before them or they made their own shit up and everybody else grew upon them.
That's right.
Which is the beauty of the game, man. So yeah, man, that was fun.
That was fun.
That was fun, man.
I love
that. That was another episode of the Old Heads for Flex. You can follow him at Flex Flex from Jersey on Twitter. You can follow me at Saul_Bookman. And as always, you can follow the pod at PHNX_Suns. Until next time, peace.
Peace out.